performer for Lee Law. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Ghost to Ghost Hoops with myself, Greggy Pierce, and now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. And we got a great podcast for you. It's in the second segment. We are going to be joined by Sean Paul, does a great job over there at Making the Madness, that podcast, along with the Field of 68. Does a little bit with regards to Mountain West Wire as well. We're going to be talking with him just about the games that we're going to be seeing on Friday and Saturday, the way that he's been taking a look at some of these teams that have been dealing with COVID pauses as well. And we're also going to be talking about this very fun Southland tournament that we've got going on as well, where you've got all the teams to kick off the season doing a little bit of an 8-team tournament. I think that more conferences should do that. So for those of you guys that love mid-major college basketball, we've got that for you, and it's going to be a fun chat over there with him in the second segment. Then in the final segment, going to give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots. First things first, always love to be able to answer Twitter questions on this podcast, and we've got one or two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at JRN41. Keep in mind, letters CM. Naming does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not wind up getting in any Twitter questions today, but we certainly had a great day of basketball on Thursday. So let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy Recap.
With me filling in on the look ahead tonight on the Vegas Ads and Information Network, I am going to be leaving out some of the later results that we wound up seeing. I'm doing this a little bit earlier, but with SMU down by 25 points, I think that it's safe to deduce that they wound up losing to Cincinnati, as Cincinnati wound up coming out and they just wound up putting a hurting on this SMU team, as SMU just wound up coming out very, very flat in this game. And for Cincinnati, a team that has been really struggling, they wound up having Micah Adams-Woods and David DeJulius combined for 32 points in the first 35 minutes, a big-time shot in the arm that Cincinnati did wind up needing. I was speaking of that Southland tournament a little bit as well, and we're going to keep this relatively brief because we're going to be talking about quite a bit of this, especially with us having games for today. But Southeast Louisiana was able to get a nice win over Houston Baptist by a count of 98-81. They were able to cover that game. For those of you guys that wound up having New Orleans like myself, a foul 90 feet away from the basket with, like, I think it was 14 seconds left in overtime, caused for double overtime, and McNeese State from there was able to win. By the way, for McNeese State, they wound up shooting at the free throw line, and I'm not even kidding here, 24 of 46, so that is a big giant takeaway there. Nichols is going to be without Ty Gordon, it appears, because he wound up missing the game against Incarnate Word, but with that said, even without Ty Gordon in the fold, they destroyed Incarnate Word 87 of 56, Incarnate Word. Rapidly going down my list of teams to trust slash not trust, as for Incarnate Word, they wound up having 17 turnovers and 21 made buckets, so that is just absolutely glorious right there. And then he did wind up having Texas A&M Corpus Christi continue to do their thing against Northwestern State. They wound up being able to get a win by about 19 to 20 points, so they won and covered that game. If you're looking at, I guess we'll call it more mainstream games, you were able to get a very good win from Indiana on their home floor against Ohio State, 67 to 51. I'm going to be talking a lot on VSiN about player of the year odds, because I do think that Mr. Johnny Davis of Wisconsin, who we're going to be getting to in a minute or two, is currently leading that hunt. And for EJ Liddell, he's a guy that I think is a little bit of a contender for it, but hurt his case with 11 points, 9 rebounds, and what was a bad loss for Ohio State. Kyle Young was back, but on a limited basis, only 3 points to Trace Jackson Davis. Perhaps he's entering the chat. 27 points, 5 blocks, 12 rebounds. Shock, shock, surprise, surprise. When you get the ball to him, good things wind up happening as Indiana goes just 2 of 15 from 3-point range, but turned the ball over just 9 times. Really the best performance that we've seen from Indiana this season, if I do say so myself. You did wind up seeing Wright State get back on track as well. They have been a big disappointment this year, but they win and cover against UIC by kind of 90 to 72. Illinois, if you wound up laying 12 at the end of the night, you wound up getting a push, but this was mostly 11 to 11.5. They win and cover against Maryland. If you wound up taking that number by a count of 76 to 64 for Maryland, 12-20 at the free throw line. Meanwhile, Illinois wound up going 12 of 18, and Kofi Coburn, in my opinion, belongs in the top 5 with regards to player of the year race as well. 23 points, 18 rebounds. Illinois just 8 of 30 from 3-point range. Actually, a little bit unlike them, but we've been noticing that Maryland has been pumping up their tempo a little bit more. They just weren't able to hit really their 2-point shots because Kofi Coburn and company was able to do a good job on the inside. You wound up having 17 points out of Dante Scott in this one. And for Maryland, they were leading this game by 4 points at one point in the second half. But then from there, things wound up going off the rails. For UCLA, things were able to stay on the rails as they wind up getting a win. Do not wind up getting the cover of right around a 24-point spread, but they get a convincing win over Long Beach State by a count of 96-78 for Long Beach State. It was their first game in quite a while, and UCLA, they had not played a game ever since that Marquette showdown. That was all the way back on December 11th, and for UCLA, not a lot of rust. 14 of 34 from three-point range. Jules Bernard, 22 points. Cody Riley, it looks like he's getting very close to being back to 100%. Wound up playing 20 minutes in this one. First action since opening night. He had 8 points. Johnny Juzang was able to chip in there, 18. So all in all, a very good performance from a UCLA team that's really been good on offense. Operation Fade Chicago State was in effect for me, and Seattle, they wound up taking them down 93-77. So we were happy about that one. A pair of very good mid-majors wound up doing battle out there in Conference USA as well, as it was the Blazers of UAB that wind up going on the road, and they wind up being able to get a big win over North Texas by a count of 69-63 for UAB. It only took 10 threes, but they wound up hitting 5 of them. Jordan Walker was able to give the team 17 points. This is a UAB team that they generate right around 12 steals per game. They only wound up getting 5 in this one, but they won the turnover battle by a count of 10-9. North Texas really got their style of very slow, very controlled, but they went just 8 of 25 from 3-point range. Bardez McBride was able to chip in their 17 points. He wound up having off the bench Tyler Perry give the team 15, but for UAB, where they won this game on the glass, 39-25. UAB looking very stout there. Southern Miss, a surprising road win against UT San Antonio. The Roadrunners said meep meep to a loss, 74-73, as for Southern Miss, they wind up going 6 of 20 from 3-point range. UTSA was 8 of 20, but where Southern Miss was able to win this game was by being able to do a good job of being able to play on the interior as UT San Antonio. They actually shot worse from two-point range than they did from three-point range as they wound up going 16 of 43 on their two-point attempts. Meanwhile, for Southern Miss, they wound up going 22 of 37. So that was the big X factor for Southern Miss in that one, a team that largely has been a little bit of a disappointment here in recent years. You wound up having a relatively harebrained game between Tarleton State and Sam Houston State, 75-64. Tarleton State was able to get the job done there. If you're looking at bottom teams in college basketball, Omaha has been a team that I have not had high regards for, and they take down North Dakota by a count of 98-82. North Dakota needs consideration for the bottom 15 in all of college basketball, so Omaha 10 of 21 from three-point range. They wind up committing just 5 turnovers in this game for North Dakota. You were able to get 20 points in this one out of Matt Norman, but Caleb Nero being out of the fold has certainly hurt this team. So North Dakota looking like quite a bit of a fade until numbers wind up moving. St. Thomas, the numbers probably got a little bit too favorable with them. They were only about a 5-point underdog against Oral Roberts, and Oral Roberts got 38 points out of Max A. Smith, 81-66 the final. St. Thomas does a great job of not turning the ball over, just 6 turnovers in this one, but 7-34 from three-point range. Oral Roberts, 11-34. You can tell that there's just a difference when it comes to Oral Roberts and so many of the other teams not named South Dakota State in this conference, and that wound up showing up in this one for the Wisconsin Badgers. They took it to Iowa all night long for Johnny Davis. It was just another culmination of him trying to be able to get the Player of the Year award. I'm doing this as there's 3 minutes left in the game. I have to record this a little bit early, but Wisconsin was able to win. They were able to cover this game for 37 minutes of the game. Johnny Davis had 26 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 turnovers. Wisconsin in general did a great job of just being able to take care of the ball. And for Iowa, Keegan Murray, they're potential Player of the Year hopeful. Keegan Murray also had a good showing. 27 points, 5 rebounds, 3 blocks with about 2 minutes left in the game. So he was certainly able to do his part, but Wisconsin was winning the rebound battle at the time of this recording. 42-22, which I don't think anyone wound up seeing coming. Wisconsin winds up playing yet another over. They've actually been a very solid over team thus far. You wind up having Washington State go on the road against Colorado, and Colorado, a team that had scored 65 points or fewer in 7 out of their last 8 games that wrapped up in regulation. They were able put up north of 75 points in this one as they were able to get the win. And the big key for them, Evan Batty was able to come in. He was able to give the team 19 points, so he was able to do a relatively solid job there. And for Washington State, they wound up losing the battle on the glass as well. It's been a little bit of an underachievement this year for Washington State. Meanwhile, a bunch of that, I would argue, has been overachieving a little bit, and they've been able to make quite a bit of coin. That be Troy. They wind up being able to play at home against Coastal Carolina. They get a 69-59 win. And for Troy, the reason why they were able to get the win, they forced 18 turnovers service on Coastal Carolina. If you have not taken note of Scott Cross, you do want to be doing so. It seems like he is doing some good work over there out there in the Sun Belt, and BYU was able to do some good work as well, as they looked like they wound up having one of their best performances in quite a while. 73-51. They wound up being able to take down Pacific as they went 12 of 25 from three-point range, as Alex Barceau had 15 points, which makes it even more impressive because he really is the lifeblood of this team. They wind up being able to get back Seneca Knight as well, a guy that has been dealing with some injury issues. He's been dealing with some eligibility concerns. He had a combined 12 points in the previous three games for the team, so him being able to notch 11 in this one, that was very good for this team. And Gideon George was able to come in off the bench, 8 points, 4 rebounds. So all in all, a very solid performance for BYU. And what else has been very solid is being able to take a look at home underdogs recently as well. I've been taking a look at this on the podcast all season long just because we haven't necessarily seen a lot of tried and true trend in college basketball. If you take a look for this season, things are relatively 50-50. Overall this season, home underdogs 266, 264, and 12 with overs, actually leading unders 1,072 overs to 1,047 unders. But if you just take a look at what we've seen over the last 7 days, we have seen overs hitting at a 58.7% clip at 101-71. Surprisingly, home underdogs are 29-30-2 against the spread. They were actually doing much better last week. We have seen a little bit of an inverse of that this week, 105, 103, and 5 over the last 30 days. So I do think that we're going to be seeing quite a few home underdogs being able to come through. We're going to be having a lot of games on Saturday, and a lot of those games are going to be involving some home underdogs in ranked versus unranked games. So I do think that that is going to be certainly something to keep our eyes on. And I know that a man that is going to be taking a look at all these games and so much more is Sean Paul. He does a great job over there with the Making the Madness podcast. He also does a terrific job with the Field of 68, their network. So we're going to be chatting with him next about what we're going to be seeing this weekend, what we're going to be seeing on Friday, and just what we've been noticing with some of these teams that have been going through COVID positives. That is up next right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Eves-Pearson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Get emotional with me, Riley Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right, which is different than empathy, yeah, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Riley Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Eves-Pearson, and now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And it is great to be joined by our guest as this man does absolutely terrific job over there with the Making the Madness podcast. Big time contributor when it comes to the Field of 68, as well as the Mountain West Wire, as we've got Sean Paul joining me on the podcast. To be able to follow him on Twitter, that's Sean Paul CBB, and that is Sean spelled S-E-A-N, no H in there. And Sean, great to have you aboard. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Greg. Always love to be on here.
Always love to have you aboard. And Sean, I do love the fact that we've got conference play now in our lives. And something that I think has been really intriguing has been this Southland tournament. It's a bracket in which you've got a winner's bracket, you've got a loser's bracket. You wind up seeing round one get played on Thursday. And I think that's really intriguing. I think that's high-level basketball. And something that I honestly wish that more conferences wound up doing, because I think that we're going to get some high-level basketball on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, I hope we see more of it too, especially from mid-major leagues, because they're not counting these as actual conference games in the conference schedule. So you get to face your conference opponents, even though it's not going to count towards your conference record. So I think that's a big advantage for all these teams, because they get to see what these teams look like. And it's always fun to play in a tournament style atmosphere, a neutral site. They get to play these games. I think it's really fun.
I agree with you. And hopefully we won't see any fouls on Friday or Saturday that occur 80 feet away from the basket with 15 seconds left to go. That winds up sending a game to double overtime. That was a little bit ridiculous, but it's been ridiculously fun to be able to take a look at that. And Sean, when you just take a look at the landscape of college basketball in general, it certainly has been, I guess you'd call it a little bit harebrained as of right now. I think that that's the best way of putting it, with all these games that have been postponed / canceled. Now, for Saturday, we were looking at about 140 games. As I'm seeing it right now, we've got about 125 on the dock. And I think that we're both in agreement that we're probably going to wind up seeing less than that. But how are you gauging some of these teams that they are going through COVID-19 protocols, whether it be via canceled games or we wind up seeing situations like Kansas State, like Texas Tech, list goes on and on of teams that are dealing with having like 7-8 guys out there with half the team out due to COVID-19 protocols.
Yeah, I think that's even harder to gauge teams when you're missing some of your better players. Like yesterday, Texas Tech, they lost to Iowa State, sure, but when you put it into context, they lost a road game against a top 15 ranked team without their two best players. So when you think about it that way, the fact that the game was even competitive at all is impressive on Texas Tech's side. And you look at teams coming in and out of pauses like Colorado State. They came out pretty slow the other day against Air Force. So it's kind of interesting. Some teams come out firing right away, some don't. It really all depends, but it's just a weird time in college basketball, similar to last year, but it's different in a lot of ways too.
I do agree that it's different, because I feel like when it comes to these teams coming off of COVID pauses, whenever you saw a team coming back for that first game, it was always a spot in which I personally on the betting lines would wind up fading them. But now I feel like it's a little bit more of a level playing field, just because you've got so many teams that are going through it, because all these pauses seem to happen all at once. They're all been confined to these last 3 or 4 weeks, because before mid-December, we really didn't see too many teams other than Wagner that wound up being on a COVID pause. And I do think that, as strange as it sounds, it's a little bit more equal this year than it is last year, just because they are all bunched together.
And like, you never know going into a game who's actually going to be playing. That's one of the strangest things about it, because we're seeing games come up to game time and you're like, all right, this team's missing two of their starters. Like, it's super interesting. I mean, it's definitely a crazy time to be in, and it's tough to get an idea on what some of these teams are without being at full strength.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Trust me, being someone that bets on this stuff, it has been very, very disappointing, to say the least, when I wind up firing in a bet on a team, and then, oh boy, we get to have the team that I fired in on not have their two top starters, which that has happened to me a little bit more often than I would like, as we do have Sean Paul joining me on the podcast. And Sean, we certainly don't have too many barn burner games that are going to be going down for Friday, but we do have a pair of Big East games I think are going to be interesting. Xavier's going to be hitting the road face-off against Butler, and then Marquette versus Georgetown. When it comes to this Marquette versus Georgetown game, I just don't know what to expect out of the Hoyas right now. Last game on coming on December 18th, they have just not looked good in general this year. They were able to get a win over Syracuse and the UMBC win. I will say that's actually a relatively solid one as well. But when it comes to Marquette, they were on a 4-game losing streak prior to getting that win over Providence. So I feel like these are two teams that they're sort of at a crossroads right now. Marquette, it feels like, is on the incline. And for Georgetown, if they get a win here, it's going to be massive. But I feel like a loss on Friday could really torpedo what's been a little bit of a herky-jerky season for them.
Yeah, I just don't think Georgetown's all that good, to be honest with you. I mean, they lost a lot of their players from last year, Jamarco Pickett, Javon Blair, Cutis Wahab, all those guys that aided them into getting into the NCAA tournament, winning that Big East tournament. Most of them are gone, and this team, it isn't all that good. They're young. Dante Harris, Aminu Muhammad, they're both really talented guys. But besides that, the play down low is really the biggest concern for me, because Ryan Mutombo, he's played a little bit, but he's not quite ready yet, and they just don't have a guy like Cutis Wahab. So for me, I think Marquette's going to be able to win this one pretty easily.
Yeah, I do think that it's going to be really interesting to see how Georgetown winds up coming in off of their pause. I typically don't like to take a look at road teams in these sorts of circumstances, but boy, oh boy, it is not a very good Georgetown team. And for Butler, they aren't necessarily the world's greatest team either, but now they are finally fully healthy. They were able to get a nice win over DePaul. They followed that up with a loss against Seton Hall, but I'm very curious to see what we wind up getting out of Xavier as well, because I mentioned COVID pauses. This is a bunch that they wound up playing on December 21st last. That was a loss against Villanova. And when it comes to Xavier, I don't know about you. I just don't necessarily know if this team is too terrific. I recognize that Butler certainly has their warts as well, but I think that Butler is very live on Friday.
I'm pretty in on Xavier because for a few reasons. Zach Freeman will miss the first six games of the year. So I think in my mind, I kind of try to remember that what they were the first seven games of the year, it was without their best player. Because I would say that Zach Freeman is probably top to bottom their best player. And their other best player, Paul Scruggs, he hasn't really gotten that scoring going yet this year, but we've seen in past years that he's more than capable of being a 15-point-per-game kind of guy. And then with the emergence of Colby Jones, Jack Nungy being a very consistent transfer coming over from Iowa, Nate Johnson's one of the best shooters in college basketball. They have a lot of pieces. I think that once they get everybody going and they're all clicking at the same time, they could be really good.
I just feel like with Xavier, I don't necessarily know what their identity is because they do have some relatively solid pieces. Even a guy like an Adam Kunkel, who wound up coming in from Belmont. I like him. Zach Fremantle, when he's firing on cylinders, that guy is absolutely terrific as well. But I just feel like Travis Seal hasn't necessarily formed necessarily a true identity at Xavier. I think that could be why I'm not necessarily so in on Xavier the most people. I'm not sure if you necessarily agree / disagree with that, but I just have a tough time gauging as to what Xavier truly is.
Yeah, I mean, Xavier, they've been solid the past few years, but they haven't been able to get over that hump. They've been an NIT team under Travis Seal, but I think this is a year where they finally get past that hump and become an NCAA tournament team. They're 24th in KenPom. They're 30th in defensive efficiency. They're 31st in offensive efficiency. That's pretty solid all the way around. Like, it's nothing spectacular, but it's all really solid. So I think if you're a Xavier team and you're a Xavier fan, you'll certainly take what you've seen so far this year. And I think it's more encouraging than what we've seen in past years.
Oh, no question. They do certainly look better than they did 2 years ago last year. Things were looking relatively solid. That COVID-19 pause just absolutely torpedoed them. So that was certainly a big bummer, as we do have Sean Paul of Making the Madness joining me right here on the podcast, Making Madness podcast along the Field of 68. And Sean, when it comes to what we're going to be seeing on Saturday, we've got a lot of ranked versus unranked games. So that's a little bit unfortunate. We really don't have too many ranked versus ranked games. But one game that is going to be very intriguing to me is going to be this Colorado State versus San Diego State game that wound up getting formed a little bit at the last minute. Colorado State was supposed to be taking on Boise State on Friday. That got postponed. Meanwhile, for San Diego State, was a little bit of tough sledding for them coming out to begin the season. But ever since they wound up taking that loss in Michigan a month ago, this team has looked very solid. Got that nice win on a neutral court against St. Mary's. Went on the road, knocked off UNLV. And it's going to be Colorado State on the road in this one. What are you expecting from this game? Because when it comes to Colorado State, I do have a little bit of a concern with this team because coming off of their COVID-19 pause in that game against Air Force, they certainly didn't look like themselves.
Yeah, I think it was going to take time. And Colorado State, if they slow down the tempo, it's always going to be a game where you have to grind it out. And that's kind of what happened in that one. But I'm curious to see what happens in this game because it's going to be kind of similar. San Diego State, one of the best defensive teams in the country. But I'm going to have trouble trusting them because of their offense, because they go through some spurts where they just can't put the ball in the basket. And if Matt Bradley's not putting the ball in the basket, really nobody can consistently put the ball in the basket on that team. And what it comes down to for me is I'm curious to see like maybe a little revenge situation for San Diego State, because last year John Tonjay hit the 4-point play in the corner that gave Colorado State like the complete 26-point comeback to win that game on the road at San Diego State. That was one of the more impressive comeback wins I've ever seen. So that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. But I think overall, Colorado State is just top to bottom more talented. While Brian Dutcher is a great coach and it's a tough environment, I just don't trust that San Diego State offense enough.
That is one that I am not going to forget anytime soon. I thought that Colorado State, when they got down 26 points, my ticket for the bet that I wanted placing was in the toilet, very nearly lit it on fire.
Hey, there you go. You were on the right side.
That was one that probably should not have come home. That did wind up coming home, but We also have a battle of these teams out there in the state of Michigan, Michigan State and Michigan. Not sure about you, but I certainly expected a little bit more here from the Wolverines. Meanwhile, Michigan State, they're a team that has won 13-1 ever since losing that Champions Classic game. They've looked relatively impressive. Didn't necessarily see the world's greatest, I guess you'd call it, cohesion in that game against Nebraska. Got a little bit sloppy with it. But when it comes to Michigan, it's really hard to evaluate this team because I think that they actually have a good shot at being able to win this game. The individual pieces for Michigan have actually been relatively solid. They just aren't really playing well as a collective team.
Yeah, they've really struggled defending the three-point shot recently. Like, they've let up a ton of wide-open three-point looks. You can't really have that if you're going to win a lot of games. They really have to find a way to get Hunter Dickinson going. But I think this could be a tough matchup for Dickinson because Marcus Bingham has really come into his own this season. Michigan State's really getting it going at the right time. Max Christie, 21 points in their win the other day. Gabe Brown's been really solid all year. He's looking like an all-Big Ten guy, maybe a first-team all-Big Ten guy. I just trust Michigan State and what I've seen more out of them this season. Wouldn't surprise me if Michigan won and this is what gets them going. But they really need this game. Like, this is an absolute must-win game for Michigan because they're 7-6 heading into this game. They get Michigan State here. If they lose, they're 7-7 heading into games against Purdue and Illinois. We could be talking about a 7-9 Michigan Wolverines team that was ranked top five in the preseason.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's thought that Michigan would be in danger of perhaps going to 7-9. The only team in the state of Michigan that you'd be saying that about is the Detroit Lions in a traditional 16-game season in the NFL. So that has been very intriguing to take a look at, as we do have Sean Paul of the Making the Madness podcast, along the Field 68, joining me on the podcast. And then the other game that I'm really curious about when it comes to Saturday, this Baylor versus TCU game. Right now, TCU going to be finding themselves no doubt an underdog in this game. We're doing this without lines. But when it comes to number one Baylor, I do think that they should be the number one team in the country right now. I don't know if they're necessarily the most talented team. I still have my trepidations when it comes to free throw shooting. And I think TCU being unranked is a little bit unfair. I have them as a fringe top 25 team right now. I do think that TCU has a good chance of being able to stay close in this game. I'm not saying that they're going to be able to win this game outright, but I could easily see this being like a two-possession game going down to the final minute, and then you wind up getting late-game fouling and things like that. Not sure where you are on TCU, but I think that they've got the chance to be able to hang in this game against Baylor.
I don't know that they hang in it. Like, I think it could be like a 10-point game heading into the final minutes. I just don't think they're quite talented enough to compete with a team like Baylor. Mike Miles is a really good guard. Love what he brings to the table. They're a really good offensive rebounding team, and I do like guys like Emmanuel Miller and Micah Peavy, some versatile athletic defenders. Emmanuel Miller can really score inside also, but what it comes down to for me is just the experience of Baylor. I think that's going to be able to take them over in this one, because TCU is a team that added a lot of pieces in the offseason, and while Baylor did lose a lot of their national championship team from last year, you look at three of their starters, they returned. They were returning players, or I guess four of them if you count LJ Cryer. That's four returning starters from last year. So Baylor has that championship DNA, and I don't think they'll have too much of a problem with TCU.
I think that's going to be really interesting to see if TCU is going to be able to make a statement. We have seen home teams do relatively solid in conference play throughout the seasons, and this year it certainly has been magnified a little bit with fans in the stands. And Sean, we've talked about a couple games that I'm going to be taking a look at for Friday and Saturday. Is there a game or two that really stands out to you? Because like I mentioned, we don't really have a lot of ranked versus ranked games. I think the only one that we're seeing right now is that Kansas versus Texas Tech game, but I certainly do think that there's a lot of good games on the card these next 2 days.
I think Virginia against North Carolina, that's an interesting one because it's two teams that really need the win, right? You look at Virginia, they've lost quite a few games early in the season. They lost to Navy. They almost lost to Pitt. They ended up beating Syracuse, but you look at North Carolina, they just can't defend, and we've seen that be a problem for them. Virginia's gotten it going recently, and honestly, it wouldn't surprise me because of how good of a coach Tony Bennett is and how bad the ACC is if Virginia ended up being like a top three or four team in the ACC. And I was way out on Virginia coming into the season. I had them like six, and they haven't really shown me anything that's been super impressive, but the conference is terrible. So if they ended up being one of the better teams in the league, that wouldn't surprise me, and this would be a big time win for them.
Oh, the ACC has been absolutely cataclysmically bad. It has been very shocking to say that, to say the least. I do think that we are going to see a couple teams be able to rise up. I do like the outlook of Wake Forest in that conference. To your point, I do think that Virginia is going to be able to figure it out a little bit. I just have a lot of faith in Tony Bennett as a coach in general, but not as much faith as I have in you, Sean, of being able to provide absolutely tremendous analysis. You do a great job over there at the Field of 68. the Making the Madness podcast absolutely superb as well. And I know that you do a bunch of other ventures as well. So love to get people at home know how they're able to follow you on social media, just everything that you've got going on in general as well.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at SeanPaulCBB. Definitely stay tuned. Everything I have going on there. Weekly mid-major top 25 show. The game that happened, Loyola Chicago and San Francisco, the top two ranked teams in the poll. Loyola Chicago comes out on top, so I'd have to assume they'll be number one again. So that was a pretty interesting game for the poll. And then there's another good top 10 matchup coming up here. It already happened by the time you're posting this, but North Texas against UAB, that's a game I'm definitely going to be tuned into because it's two top 10 teams in the Field of 68 mid-major top 25 poll. So definitely stay tuned to all that. And, you know, thanks for having me on, Greg. Definitely appreciate it.
Always appreciate you, Sean. Sean Paul doing an absolutely terrific job with everything that he's got going on, the Making the Madness podcast, the Field of 68 work that he does, and so much more. One of the most insightful men in college basketball, and always great to get him aboard. And now it is that time of the podcast coming up next that I give you picks and analysis for every game on the college basketball betting board for this Friday as we hit some bank shots.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast with myself, Greggy Spears, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always a pleasure to have our good friend Sean Paul of Making the Madness on the podcast. He does an absolutely terrific job with the Making the Madness podcast along the Field of 68, and always a pleasure to get his insights. So big thanks to him. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis for every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at JarenScorty1. We're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the games in more power conferences first, and then the Southland games are going to be at the absolute bottom, along with the Patriot League games. So pretty much Patriot League and Southland is going to be at the very end. Everything else is going to be in time order at the beginning. And reason why I go in Las Vegas rotation order is because when you go to Las Vegas, instead of saying, oh, I want to bet on UW Green Bay on the spread getting 15.5 points, you'd instead give their rotation number of 875, and a lot of books actually do list it in this order. So that is why I wind up doing it this way. And we're going to be starting with that first game of 861, 862 on the betting board. You've got yourself Marquette, and Marquette is going to be in the road face against Georgetown. The Hoyas are finding themselves as a 2-point underdog, and your total on this game is 153. I side with our good friend Sean on this one. I want to make Marquette a 4-point favorite, so I'm willing to lay the points. When it comes to Marquette, I do think that this team has been able to turn the corner a little bit and has been able to do a better and better job on defense. We saw them hold Providence to sub 60 points. Now, you've got two real alpha dog scores in Justin Lewis and Daryl Morissette, who combined to give you 29 points per game. Lewis, only guy on the team that's giving you more than 4.3 rebounds per game, so he certainly has filled that void. Meanwhile, Morissette, top 3-point shooter with right around a 38% hit rate. You've also got Greg Elliott. He does shoot 45% from 3, 83% the free throw line. And Marquette overall, they shoot 72% the line. It's a Marquette team that has been a little bit suspect on the road, but for Georgetown, as I mentioned before, this is a team that they're going to be playing their first game in more than 3 weeks now. The guy that I really do like for this team is Amin Mohammed. He has been able to do a nice job, 14.5 points, 8.5 rebounds per game. And I will say, the transfer from the Citadel, Caden Rice, he has had some big performances. You take a look at the team in the last six games prior to them going on a little bit of a hiatus, 14-plus points in all but one of them. Now, the all but one of them, he had literally 0 points in that game against South Carolina, but he has been able to come alive for this team now. Doesn't dish out the ball at all, but he shoots 42.5% from three-point range, so he's been able to do a terrific job with his offense, which is a big reason why I do wind up setting this total at 154. You've got a Marquette team that they rank in the top 40 with regards to possessions per game. Georgetown always a team that has been relatively solid on offense and not necessarily so great on defense, but I do think that an X factor for Marquette also Igrodaro, hopefully I said that one correctly. I'm sure that I did not, but a combined 38 points and 11 rebounds for Mr. I'll give this another shot, Ogihodaro. He has been able to do a very good job for this team, chipping in the right around 4.5 rebounds per game. Tyler Kolek is also able to give you a little bit over 6 assists at 2.7 turnovers per game. Marquette doesn't necessarily turn the ball over a ton. And to Georgetown's credit, this is not a team that they're out there committing a bunch of turnovers, but 14.5 per game, despite the fact that they go up tempo, a little bit unacceptable. They do shoot 39% from three, but I think that Marquette is going to be able to do a relatively solid job of being able to turn Georgetown over. Set Marquette is a 4-point favorite, made this total 154, so going over along with Marquette. 863, 864 on the betting board. Kent State, it's the road to face off against Ohio. The Ohio Bobcats find themselves anywhere between 7.5 and 8-point favorites in your total in this game, and between 132.5 and 133. I have soured on Kent State quite a bit, but I think that this line is a little bit overreactionary. I set this line at 6.5 when it comes to Kent State. It's been a bunch that has actually played in the bottom 25 with regards to possessions per game. Ohio, they rank right around 200th in that category as well, so you certainly don't have Blazers out there, but I do think that you wind up getting some late-game following, and you do have a Kent State team that, as a collective, they shoot 80% the free-throw line. Each of their top seven scorers shoot at least 74.2% at the free-throw line, including 6'11", Justin Hamilton, 9.7 points, 6.5 rebounds, 1.5 per game, Sincere Carey. I sincerely think he's going to be able to dish out the ball. 4.9 assists to 2.5 turnovers per game, 16.5 points per contest, so he's been able to do a good job. Malik Jacobs is able to give you some good production with right around 11.5 points per game. Now Mark Sears has been able to take over this Ohio offense. 18 points, 5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, shooting 45% from 3-point range, 91% the free throw line in Ohio. They themselves shoot 78.5% at the free throw line. They give you 7 steals per game with each other top 5 scores, giving you at least 1 steal per game, including Ben Roderick, who's been able to step up, give the team right around 7 points per contest. Has been off with his 3-point shot. Ohio's collective, they shoot right around 32.5% from 3-point range. Nothing great, nothing terrible, but Ben Venderplas along Chase Carter give you good versatility. Combined 14 rebounds, 26.5 points per game, 2.5 steals per game, so they've been able to do a good job there, but you need to get a little bit more out of some of these ancillary pieces. Someone like a Sam Towns, I was expecting to have a little bit of a bigger year. He's had 3-plus rebounds in now 3 of the team's last 5 games, but I do think that the depth of Kent State going to be able to keep them in it. I do think that you wind up getting some late-game following, and both of these teams are money at the line, so going to be taking a look at the over. Set this one at 137.5. Made Ohio a 6.5 point favorite. So here at 7.5 to 8, going to be taking a look at the points. 865, 866 on the betting board. Detroit is going to be playing us to UW-Milwaukee. Milwaukee is finding themselves in between a 4 and 5 point underdog in your total on this game. And we're between 137.5 and 138. I made this line 5. Now it looks like Pat Baldwin Jr. is going to be out once again because he wound up entering into the team's game a few days ago. He was not looking right. He wound up going off the court. So expect Pat Baldwin Jr. to be off the floor. That is the expectation. If I see something different, I'll make an adjustment, but I'm anticipating him being out. So it's going to be all about DeAndre Golson, who's been able to give the team 16 points, 5 rebounds, shooting about 36% from 3, 14-plus points in each of the team's last 5 games, 5-plus rebounds in every one of them, and at least a steal per game in all of them as well. But Antoine Davis is going to be the best player out there on the floor for Detroit. 22.2 points, 4 rebounds, shooting 40% from 3-point range, 19-plus points in each of the team's last 5 games. A guy that's able to deal out right around 5.2 assists and a steal per game as well. Now with Detroit, it's been a while since this team wound up playing last, the 19th of December against Central Michigan, or else I would have them as more like a 6 or 7 point favorite. Instead, I've got this line at 5. Now, at the 5, I'd be willing to lay it with Detroit before I'd be willing to take the 5 with UW-Milwaukee, just because they are so banged up, and I do like the ancillary piece of Detroit in Mudaw Asech, who's been able to do a nice job down low. 16 points, 8.5 rebounds. He pops threes at a 36.5% clip. Detroit, 78% at the free throw line, 35.5% from 3-point range. That matters in spreads like this. Meanwhile, Milwaukee, they shoot 71% at the free throw line, only about 31% from 3. You do have a good rebounder. Enjoy St. Pierre. He's been able to give the team 6.4 points, 6.6 rebounds per game, and right around 1.5 blocks per game, so he's been able to do a relatively solid job there, but you're going to need someone like a Donovan Newby to be able to step up. He's been able to give the team 2.5 assists, shooting 7.5% from 3-point range, but his facilitation has gone down 2 assists or fewer in 4 of the team's last 5 games, and for that matter, he scored a combined 17 points in the last 4 games. So I do think that Detroit, despite the layoff, going to be able to get it done here, willing to lay up to 5 with them, and with this total, set it at a 137. You got a Detroit team that actually is in the bottom 75 with regards to possessions per game. UW-Milwaukee, with their ailments to Pat Baldwin Jr. and company, have had to slow down as well. So take a look at the under and willing to lay up to 5 here with Detroit. 867, 868 on the betting board. IPFW, it's a road face-off against Youngstown State. The Penguins find themselves in between a 6 to a 6.5 point favorite, and your total on this game is anywhere between 143 and 144. I made Youngstown State a 7-point favorite. Hopefully they cover, because then I can throw out there the gif on my Twitter feed at JarenScorty1 of a little penguin saying, "I'm on my way!" But with that said, you've got Michael Akuchi, who's been very solid for this team, being able to give the team 14 points, 7.5 rebounds. Now, Youngstown State, they shoot as a collective about 33% from 3-point range. We've got one good sharpshooter out there in the backcourt in Shamir Rathan Mays, 7.5 points per game, but making 44% of his triple tries. A guy that's also able to give you right around a few assists per game. He's given the team 2+ in now 3 of the last 5 games, so that's been pretty solid for this team. Now, they have been dealing with an injury to Garrett Covington pretty much all season long. As a result, you've seen Tevin Olison need to step up. 12 points, 4.5 rebounds, so he has been able to do his part. Then you take a look at the flip side and what you're able to get out of IPFW, a team that last year was one of the tops in all of college basketball with regards to 3-point shooting percentage, shooting about 35% this year, so they've been able to pick it up a little bit. Deontay Billups, 10 points, 3 rebounds, a steal and a half per game, so he's been able to do a good job there, shooting 44% from 3-point range. Jalen Pipkins, along with Jared Godfrey, these guys combined to be able to give you just below 31 points, 7.5 rebounds, and 6 assists per game. They combine for 3 steals per game as well. Problem is, Fort Wayne, they commit right around 14.5 turnovers per game, and they're not necessarily an up-tempo team. Now, Damian Chung-Kyu is able to give you a little bit over 3 assists per game as well, and he's been able to do a little bit of a better job with the offense. Had 18 points in a game against Cleveland State about a week and a half ago. Last year, he was really the headliner for a Mount St. Mary's team that wanted making the NCAA tournament, and R.A. Kabadia is able to give you 6.5 rebounds per game, but I do think that Youngstown State is going to be able to win the battle down low. I think that Youngstown State is going to do a good job of being able to cut off the 3-point arc as well. Youngstown State has been playing much more slow this year, so I did wind up setting the total 135. Looking at the under end, want to lay up to 70 here with Youngstown State, so laying the points as well. 869, 870 on the betting board. Maris hits the road face off against Fairfield. The Stags are a 4-point favorite, and your total on this game are between 130 and 130.5. Wound up sending Fairfield as a 5-point favorite. Now, Maris is a team that I've really warmed up on because they were able to get a nice road win against Boston U a few weeks ago. I just don't necessarily know what this offense is trying to be at this point, because you take a look at Maris and they have no facilitation whatsoever. This is about as much of an isolation team as you're going to find. They average 8.7 assists per game on 71 points per game. I mean, that's just absolutely insane right there. They've got one of the lowest percentages of assists per made bucket that I have ever seen. They shoot about 34% from 3-point range, and their top 2 scorers, they have been able to do a good job of knocking down their 3. So you've got Ricardo Wright, who's been able to give you 14 points per game. He shoots 41% from 3-point range. He's given the team 9+ points in now 4 of the team's last 5 games. And then J.O. Aduka has been able to do a solid job as well. 13 points per game, shooting 44% from 3-point range, 13+ points in each of the team's last 5 games. So he has been very good for this team. I will say he does wind up getting into quite a bit of foul trouble, which has been a little bit of an issue for this team. And you've really only got one guy that's giving you more than 4.5 rebounds per game. That would be Michael Hermesy. So that's going to be an issue against Supreme Cook, who has supremely been the cook down low for Fairfield. He's been able to give the team 7.5 rebounds, right around 9.5 points per game. Got a Fairfield team that they play very slow and controlled, and they bottom 75 with regards to possessions per game, shoot 34.5% from 3-point range, 71% at the free throw line. Jake Wojcik is able to give you 9.5 points per game, 92% free throw shooter. And for that matter, when you take a look at this Fairfield team, among their top 8 scores, I believe that 7 of them shoot at least 72.7% at the free throw line. So that's been very beneficial for this team. They've got quite a bit of depth. Even someone like a Charles Madeo is able to give you 6.5 points, 3 rebounds per game. I like Caleb Green being able to give you 3 assists to right around 1.2 turnovers per game. So a team that does a good job of being able to take care of the ball. I do think that things are going to be relatively controlled in this game. I do think that you could wind up getting some late game fouling though as well. And both of these teams relatively solid at the free throw line. So I did wind up setting this total at a 132. Taking a look at the over end with Fairfield. 1-5 here with them. So laying the points and taking a look at the over. 871, 872 on the betting board. Cornell hits the road to face off off against Penn. The Quakers find themselves in between 3.5 and 4-point favorites in your total on this game. It is between 157 and 157.5. I do recognize that Cornell is playing much more up-tempo. They are in the top 40 with regards to possessions per game. Penn is not necessarily a team that is looking to necessarily go downshifting here, but at the same time, I think we've went a little bit far with regards to the total. I wound up saying the total more around a 152. When it comes to Cornell, this can be a little bit of a hit or miss team from 3-point range overall this season. They've been shooting about 37% as a collective. The guy that has really been able to come on recently, Keller Boothby. He has given the team 9 points per game, but he has been able to shoot 56% from 3-point range, making at least 50% of his threes in 4 of the team's last 5 games. Came back to earth in the win against Dartmouth, where he only wound up having 2 points in that one, so very much a heat check guy. When it comes to Cornell, you don't necessarily have a ton down low, but you've got someone that is able to give you right around 5.5 rebounds per game, a good versatility in general, and Kobe Dixon at 6'9". He has been able to give you right around 3.5 assists per game, 1.3 blocks per contest, so a good stat sheet suffer for the team. Max Mertz has been able to give Penn right around 5.5 rebounds per game, but Jordan Dingle, I do think, is going to be the best player out there on the floor. He's able to give the team 20 points per game. Jordan Charles backs him up with right around 10. Both of these guys give you between 3 and 3.5 rebounds per game. Charles, really the main three-point shooter for this team, shooting 42% from distance. Dingle shoots 35.3% for a Penn team that, overall, they shoot 36% from three. Penn is not a team that forces a lot of steals, right around 5 for contests. Cornell, their 7 per game is a little bit better, but certainly not a team that is looking to rip the ball away. They have been cooling down a little bit recently, and for Penn, this has just been a team that has taken a whole bunch of single-digit losses. They've actually been halfway decent at being able to hang in games, but they've been close, but no cigarro. They were able to bust through against Brown. I do think that there's a chance that that could wind up manifesting itself a little bit. I do think that this is a Penn team that, under Steve Donahue, is going to be well-coached. They're going to be able to peak a little bit late, so I did wind up saying them as a 6-point favorite in this spot. I'm willing to lay it with them. Also made this little 152. I think that they're going to be able to get a little bit more of their slow-ish tempo, so going to be taking a look at an under as well. 873-874 is a postponed game between Quinnipiac and Canisius, so we go to another postponed game. 875-876 UW Green Bay in Oakland. Not going to be happening, so we go to 877-878 because there's no money to be made on those two games, but there's money to be made on this game. Cleveland State is going to be hitting the road to face off against Robert Morris. Bobby Morris, anywhere between a 7 and 8 point underdog with your total on this game, anywhere between 144 and 145. This game wound up opening up at pretty much 7 across the board. We have seen some movement, and I wound up doing a little bit of movement with regards to my handicap as well, because you wound up seeing some big news come out right around 6, 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific time with regards to this game, and that Rasheem Dunn, the top scorer for Robert Morris, he has left the program. So that is not necessarily too great there, ladies and gentlemen. This is a Robert Morris team that has been lighting your money on fire all year long at 2-10 against the spread. You had Dunn being able to give the team 13 points. He was their main facilitator of 4 assists per game, shooting about 31% from 3 for a bunch that they shoot 33.5% from distance, 75.5% free throw line, turning the ball over 14.5 times per game. Now, it seems like Michael Green III is probably going to be assuming those point guard roles. Right around 9 points, 2.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists per game, but he has given the team 9 points of fear in each out of the last 5 games, aside from that Bowling Green game that he wound up playing in, 3 assists or fewer in 4 of the last 5, so he hasn't necessarily been too effective coming in for Bryan. And then you take a look at Cleveland State, and this is a team that they really do hang their hat on defense. This is not a team that they necessarily play too up-tempo. They shoot 66% free throw line, 32.7% from 3-point range. I do like what you've been able to get Abdomoy Hodge recently. Hodge wound up having a little bit of a rough start to the season, but it now has been able to give the team 14 plus points in 4 of the team's last 5 games, so that has been very solid. You take a look at him recently, and after he wound up getting off to a really, really rough start to the year with regards to his 3-point shooting, has been able to pick it up much more recently. He has been able to shoot at least 36% from 3-point range in now 3 of the team's last 4 games in this recent run, so that has been good in 2 plus steals in 4 of the team's last 5 games. You've been able to have Torrey Penn just be an absolute Swiss Army knife player. 13 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals per game, and then you've got Brock Finson shooting 42% from 3-point range, 10 points per game. Trago Million is back in the fold after he wound up missing a little bit of time earlier this year, or at the very least was not effective, with right around 2 assists, 9 points per game. So it's a really well-rounded backcourt with Deshaun Parker being a good on-ball defender. With Robert Morris, you do have Khalil Spear down low, 11.5 points, 7 rebounds per game. So he's been solid. Cam Ferris, after he wound up missing the first four games of the season, is shooting 49% from three-point range, 11 points per game, right around 9-plus points in four of the team's last five games. And I do think that you're going to be able to get a little bit of something out of Anach Cheeks down low, 7.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and a steal per game. So he's actually been able to emerge for this team, but I think that Robert Morris is really going to be up against it. Prior to what we wound up seeing with Rasheem Dunn, I had this line more around 6.5 personally, so I was sort of on the border. I have made a move to where anything of single digits, I'm willing to take Cleveland State. I set this line at 9.5. I was thinking 9 at first. I'm going to 9.5 just because this Robert Morris team has been really, really bad, and now you wind up taking out their main facilitator and scorer. I think that's going to be doomsday. Set this all at 135 as well. Got a Cleveland State team that is relatively solid on defense and a Robert Morris team that I think is going to need to slow down the tempo with not having their main facilitator out there. So it's a spot in which I'm taking a look at the under and willing to lay single digits with Cleveland State to lay the points along with the under. 889-880 on the betting board. Harvard is going to be playing us to Brown. What can Brown do for you? Well, if they hang in this game and if they lose by two or fewer because they're a 2.5-point underdog, they're able to make you some money. They are anywhere between 2 and 2.5 total on this game. Anywhere between 138.5 and 139.5. And when it comes to Harvard, I want to make them a 5.5-point favorite. So I don't think that Brown is going to be doing too much for you. You do have a Brown team that I like the way that they've been able to progress this year. I just don't think that they're necessarily talented enough to be able to pull this one off. You do have a guy in Tamining Cho who's been able to give you 12.5 points, 8 rebounds, only shooting about 27% from 3. That's a big woe for Brown. They shoot about 30.7% from 3, 73.5% free throw line. Out of their top four scorers, three of them make at least 81% of their free throws, including Keno Lilly Jr. has been coming off the bench quite a bit for this team. 13-plus points in each of the team's last five games. He's able to give you a steal and a half per contest, and you get a steal and a half out of Dan Friday as well, who's been able to give the team 9 points per game. But for Dan Friday, he has been able to give the team 8 points or fewer in each of the team's last five games, so he has seen some regression there. Nana Asuinana has only been able to give you right around 5 boards, 7 points per game, so I was expecting a little bit more out of him. And then when it comes to Harvard, it has been a little bit since this team wound up playing last. The last time Harvard wound up playing was on the 21st of December against Howard. But with that said, Chris Ludlum along Noah Kirkwood, these two guys combined for 32.7 points, a little bit over 15 rebounds, and just over 4.5 steals per game. So they are very gifted there. Harvard, they shoot 73% free throw line, 34.2% from three-point range. Got a pair of guys that shoot between 40 and 42% from three-point range. Lucas Sakota, who's been able to give you 11.5 points per game, and Cale Catchings, who's been able to give you right around 8.5 points per game. They combine for 7 rebounds with Sakota, right around 2.5 assists per game as well. And a guy that I think could be able to help the team moving forward, Lewis Lesman. He wound up missing a few games this season, has been a little bit banged up, but a guy that is shooting about 31% from three, was relatively highly touted coming out of high school. I think that we're going to see him come of age towards the back half of the season. Harvard has been playing at a relatively controlled tempo. Brown, a team that is looking to hang their hat on defense as well. I think they're going to get a slow game with Harvard coming off of a little bit of a break, but I do think that Harvard is going to be able to win the battle on the glass that allows them to be able to win the game. Set Harvard as 5.5-point favorite, willing to lay here. So this sold at 132.5 as well, so diving under. 881, 882 on the betting board, staying out there in the Ivy League. Columbia is going to be hitting the road face-off against Princeton. The Tigers find themselves anywhere between 17 and 17.5 point favorites in your Tarleton's game. It is 143.5. What is very interesting about Princeton is that this has been one of the top teams to the over in all of college basketball this season. They have played, I believe, 80% of their games to the over, and this is a Columbia team that, well, they have not been playing a heck of a lot of defense, but with Columbia as well, they're a team that has been a little bit more sloppy, but I do think that they're going to look to control the glass to be able to hang in this game, and Bryant transfer Patrick Harding is going to allow them to be able to do that. A little bit over 7 rebounds per game from, you take a look at the just overall resume of him, he's been able to do a nice job whenever he's been healthy. Now, he was dealing with a couple ailments before Columbia wound up going on a little bit of a hiatus, but should be able to go in this one. Last game wound up coming on the 13th of December against Sacred Heart. He was limited in that game, but now he's had about 4 or so weeks to be able to rest up. You've got Liam Murphy, who's able to help out the team as well. Mr. Do-It-All with 13 points, 5 rebounds per game, a guy that's popping threes at a 41% clip, 12-plus points in 4 of the team's last 5 games. And for Columbia, even if you aren't able to have Patrick Harding out there, the good news is, prior to them going on a little bit of a hiatus, they were able to get Ike Nikwe back in the fold, a guy that 2 seasons ago was able to average 9.5 points, 5.5 rebounds for this team. He wound up playing in the first game of the season and did not wind up returning until the Albany game on the 11th of December, and in his 2 games back, a combined 35 points, a guy that traditionally has averaged 5-plus plus rebounds per game. So I think that that's going to be big against a Princeton team that they don't necessarily have ideal size. Ethan Wright is able to give you 7.8 rebounds per game. He stands right around 6'4", 6'5", 14.5 points per game. Now with Princeton, reason why they've been cashing so many overs, they shoot 38.3% from three-point range, with Wright shooting above 42% from three-point range. Ryan Langbord is able to shoot 43% from distance. He's given the team 11 points per game. And Jalen Llewellyn shoots 40% from distance, 16 points, 2.5 assists per game. You do have a team that also has a very shifty guy in Toussaint Iva Bauman. He has been able to give the team 14 points, 6 rebounds, a little bit over 5 assists per game at 6'8", so a little bit of a point forward. I do like what he's able to bring to the table, but for Princeton, it's been a while since they've played as well. Their last game wound up coming on the 21st of December against Keene College. Their last game against a D1 foe, you have to go back to the 13th of December, so it's been a while for both of these teams. I think that there's going to be a little bit of a rust, which I wound up taking into account when it came to this total, as I said it had more around a 143.5. This is a Princeton team that they certainly aren't necessarily an up-tempo team. I think that they're going to be a little bit rusty with their three-point shots. I do think that Columbia not going to be able to win this game outright or anything like that, but set the line more around a 13. So I'm going to be taking the points with Columbia, and I'm going to be taking a look at an under as well. This will be the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we get the extra games. 883, 884, and it is the New York Post play of the day. Xavier hits the red face-off against Butler. Butler is a 5.5 point underdog with your total on this game anywhere between 130.5 and 131. And the New York Post play of the day is Butler. You tell that when I was talking with Sean Paul, I absolutely love that. I have a little bit of a soft spot for this Butler team, and I do think that now that you've got back in the fold Bryce Enzi, this team is going to be able to hold their own on the glass. Enzi this season has been able to get the team 7.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, a steal and a half per game. It's a Butler team that certainly has been a little bit lackadaisical with regards to their offense, shooting about 33% for 369% at the free throw line, but Aaron Thompson has done a nice job of being able to dish out the ball. 4.6 assists and 2.5 turnovers per game. You do have a guy in Chuck Harris, who was able to take over a game as well. Only about 10.5 points per game this season. Wound up being limited in that game against Seton Hall, but was able to come through in that game against DePaul as well. So I do think that he's going to be back to his normal self. And you've got a very versatile player in Bryce Golden. Golden is someone that's shooting 35% per three with 10 points per game as a 6'9" stretch player. You take a look at the flip side for Xavier, and I still have a lot of question marks when it comes to this team. Nate Johnson has been able to give you 13 points per game. He is firing at a clip of 46% from three-point range. I think that that's built on sand. Zach Fremantle has not looked like himself this year. 8.5 points, 4.4 rebounds per game. And you take a look at this Xavier team, you've got one guy that's averaging more than 5.2 rebounds per game, and that would be Kobe Jones, who has been impressive. 6'6" combo player, to be able to shoot about 35% from three-point range, be able to give the team 11.5 points, 8.2 rebounds per game, but he has slowed down recently, 11 points or fewer in three of the team's last four games. He has had a couple clunkers with having just 2 rebounds in the game that they wound up playing against Morehead State as well, so he has been slowing down a little bit. Adam Kunkel shoots right around 36% from 3, 8 points per game, but he's either going to give you 20 or he's going to give you 4, not necessarily a lot of in between there. And for Butler, this has been a team that has done a great job of being able to slow down the tempo in so many of their games. They rank in the bottom 30 with regards to possessions per game. This is a Xavier team that they rank 230th in college basketball and being able to take care of the ball. They committed turnover on right around 21% of their possessions. I do think that Butler is going to be able to force a couple turnovers, and I think that Butler has a chance to be able to win this game outright. Officially for the New York Post, I wanted giving out the spread in this game, so Butler's spread is going to be the New York Post for the day. I also set this all at 127.5. I'm going to be going under, but I personally made Butler a 1.5-point favorite. I'm going to be taking a look at them personally on the money line. Like I said in the post, they always like to give out spread bets, so I'm going to be taking Butler with the points in the post, but I personally like the money line to go along with the under. Now let's go to the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
We go in Las Vegas rotation order with these as well. This begins with the Patriot League games. 306-181, 306-182. American and Colgate was looking like a 13-13.5 point spread. This game has been postponed, so we go to 306-183, 306-184. Boston U is going to be playing us to Loyola Maryland. Loyola Maryland is finding themselves a 6.5 point underdog, and your total on this game is 134.5. I made Boston U an 8.5 point favorite. They now have Walter White back in the fold, and he is breaking bad as he's been able to give the team 13 points, 6.5 rebounds, shooting 39% per 3. Boston U is collective. They shoot 75% of the free throw line, 35% per 3. The 14 turnovers per game, that is a little bit of a woe. You're facing off against a Loyola Maryland team that they do generate 8 steals per game, including 2.2 steals per contest from Cam Spencer, who's been able to be one of the more efficient players in all of college basketball. 18.5 points, 4.8 rebounds, 4 assists, 0.9 turnovers per game. You've also got Jalen Andrews, who gives you right around 2 steals per game. Shoots 31% from distance, 14.5 points per game. You need guys around them to be able to step up. You've got a guy that's able to give you 6 points, 4 boards in Milos Ilicic, who has been able to give this team a little bit more recently. 9 plus points in each of the team's last 4 games. Golden DK, right around 4 points, 6.5 rebounds per game. But I think that Sukumail Bathan, who's been able to give this Boston U team 14 points, 9.9 rebounds per game, is going to be able to eat things up down low. You've got Javonte McCoy shooting 48.5% from 3-point range, 17 points per contest. A Boston U team that has always been traditionally bad at the free throw line. They've been able to improve that quite a bit. Now, you do take a look at this Boston U team. You do have a couple of ailments. Devin Zink has been out of the fold for quite a while. I do think that Anthony Morales might be able to step up a little bit, a guy that has been able to dish out the ball. He's been able to give this team a few assists recently, as he has been able to combine for 11 assists in the last 5 games. So has been a little bit of a 6'8" do-it-all sort of glue guy for this team. I do think that his emergence has been very key. I do think the Boston U is going to be able to control this game. They are a team that ranks in the bottom 75 with yards and possessions per game, a very good defensive team, and I think that Loyola Maryland is going to have a tough time with regards to that, because this is a Loyola Maryland team that they rely a lot on the outside shot. They shoot right around 32% per 3, 16 turnovers per game. I think that things get sloppy, and Boston U is able to pull it out. Willing to lay up to 8.5 here with Boston, so I'm going to be laying the points. So this all at 128.5 as well, so diving under 306-186. Army is going to be playing Osa Lehigh. Mount Knox are a 5.5 point underdog with your total on this game 146. When it comes to Lehigh, I want to say them as a 2-point underdog. I do think that this is an Army team that is very hard to bet on when it comes to these spreads, just because with Army, this is one of the worst free throw shooting teams in all of college basketball. They as a collective are shooting 59.6% free throw line. Now, I do like their two top players in Josh Caldwell along with Jalen Rucker. These two guys combined for 29 points, 9.5 rebounds, 2.9 assists per game apiece. Caldwell, 2 steals per game. Rutgers is able to give you a steal per game as well, but 14 turnovers per contest with these two combined for 5.7. That's not necessarily ideal. Now with Lehigh, they have been dealing with Marquise Wilson being out with injury. He's been able to give the team 11 points per game, but you do have Jamarrell Wilson, who's still out there. 40.5%, 3-point shooter, 12.5 points per game. I like what you've been able to get out of 13 point per game score. Evan Taylor has been able to chip in there, 6 rebounds. He's shooting about 35% from 3-point range, 14 plus points in 3 of the team's last 4 games. Nick Lynch is a 7-footer that's able to give you right around 7 points per contest. Hasn't necessarily been effective down low, but Dominic Perlin is able to give you a block and 5.7 rebounds per game, so he has been relatively solid. He's been a little bit more limited with regards to his minutes. He seems to be dealing with a little bit of an ailment, but the small doses that we've been seeing out of him recently, they have been relatively solid, and I do think a little bit of an X factor out there in the backcourt. Reed Fenton, who really took off as a freshman, has stalled the last 2 seasons, but is coming off a nice 12-point performance in a win against Colgate. I think that that's exactly what he needed to be able to get gassed up. I do think that this is going to be a relatively close game. I think that you wind up seeing some fouling. Lehigh likes to be able to slow things down a little bit. Army, a team that's atrocious at the free throw line. So, wound up setting this little 140, diving under. And with Army, made them a 2-point favorite. So, going to be taking 5.5 here with the Mountain Hawks. 306-187, 306-188. Holy Cross is going to be playing with the Lafayette. The Leopards are finding themselves a 3-point road favorite. And your total on this game, it is 137. And when it comes to Lafayette, they actually wound up opening up a 2.5-point favorite. At 2.5, I'd be willing to lay it. At 3, I would be as well, because I wound up saying my line personally at 3. It's just hard to have any faith whatsoever in this Holy Cross team. Holy Cross actually plays a little bit more slow, but they're just very inefficient with regards to their defense. You do have Jarrell Gates, who's able to give you 12 points, 7 rebounds per game, and Holy Cross shoots actually 35.5% from 3 and 70% at the free throw line. Among their top 4 scorers, all of them shoot at least 73.7% at the free throw line. Judson Martindale's been able to give you 11 points per game, shooting 37.5% from 3-point range. You got a 40.5% 3-point shooter in Kyrell Luce, who's been able to give you 12 points per game as well, but it's a team that they don't necessarily have ideal depth. RJ Johnson has been dealing with a little bit of an injury as well, has been able to come back for the team, but ever since his return has been very pedestrian, 8 points or fewer in each of the last 3 games. Meanwhile, you take a look at Lafayette, and they do have a road win to their credit against Rutgers. How or why they got that win, I have no idea, but Neil Quinn has been very good as a versatile 7-footer with 12 points, 8 rebounds, 4.3 assists per game, and 1.2 blocks per contest. Now, last time these guys wound up hitting the floor, December 22nd against a non-D1 school, so it has has been quite a while since they face off against E1 competition, but also out there for the team, you've got a 38.5% three-point shooter in Mr. Tyrone Perry, who's been able to give this team 11.5 points per game, 2.5 assists per game. I also do like the fact that you get some good facilitation out of C.J. Fulton, right around 3 assists per game, 7 points per contest, someone that has been a good glue guy with regards to defense, doesn't turn the ball over a lot, 4 turnovers in the last 5 games, so he does a good job of being able to protect the ball, unlike Holy Cross. When it comes to this Lafayette bunch, you do have a guy that's also able to give you right around 6.5 rebounds per game while chipping in their 11.5 points per game in Kyle Jenkins. So I do think that Lafayette is going to be able to win this game from within. They've got good enough three-point shooting in this spot. They shoot right around 33.5% for three, 74% at the free throw line. I do think that you're going to see a pair of teams that are a little bit sloppier with the ball. I think that Holy Cross is going to commit too many turnovers to be able to hang in this game. So did wind up saying my line at three, at the three, exactly like I'm seeing right now. I'd be willing to lay it with Lafayette. Wouldn't want to take it with Holy Cross. I need to get north of three to be able to take a shot there. And I set this total at 134. So diving under with that as well. 306, 189, 306, 190. Navy is going to be playing us to the bracket bus and Bucknell Bison. Bucknell is a 13-point underdog with your total on scheme 139. And when it comes to Bucknell, wound up saying them as a 9.5-point underdog. When it comes to Bucknell, you do have Andre 3000 screen back in the fold for this team. A 7-footer that's able to give you 10.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, and a block per game. Bucknell shoots 35.5% for three and 79% the free throw line. They have been a good over team because they have played no defense whatsoever. Meanwhile, you've got a Navy team that they really pride themselves on defense. They're a bunch of which they do wind up generating right around 7.5 steals per game, considering they're in the bottom 75 at all of college basketball with regards to possessions per game. That is beneficial. But they also shoot 66.7% at the free throw line, which I do have my question marks when it comes to that. You have been able to get Jalen Walker going. 7 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. A guy that shoots 46% from 3-point range. John Carter Jr. shoots 45% from distance. Really their main free throw shooter at 89%. 14 points, 4.2 rebounds. Greg Summers is able to chip in there. 6 boards, 2.5 assists, 1.5 steals per game, 10.5 points per game. Carter Jr. also gives you 1.2 steals per game. And I do like what you're able to get. Richard Njoku, 5.5 rebounds per contest. A guy that is not necessarily going to give you a ton of scoring, but down low has given the team at least a block in each other last 5 games. But with Bucknell, you've got the Funk. That'd be Andrew Funk. 18.5 points, right around 2.5 assists per game, shooting 35% from 3-point range. Xander Rice has been able to give the team 12 points per game. Now, Xander Rice, he is a little bit of a heat check guy. He's certainly had his ups and downs, but someone who's been able to contribute double figures in now 4 of the last 5 games. So I like the way that he's coming around. And Alex Timmerman, right around 9.5 points, 6.5 rebounds per game. I think he's going to be able to keep Bucknell alive in this game. I think that Bucknell is going to be able to do a relatively solid job down low. Do you mind saying this total 136.5? I do think that Bucknell is going to be able to do a good job on defense against a Navy team that, let's call it what it is, offense is a little bit of a work in progress. They shoot about 32% for 3-point range as a collective, and I wound up saying Bucknell as a 9.5 point dog, so willing to take the double digits with the Bison and looking at the under as well. Now, for these final 4 games, there are no numbers available because these are matchups that were set pretty much overnight because this is a part of the Southland tip-off tournament. This is going to be taking place at the Merrill Center in Katy, Texas. So these last 4 games, all neutral court games, as we go 306-191, 306-192, Houston Baptist and New Orleans. No numbers up on this game, like I mentioned, but I want to make New Orleans a 12-point favorite, and I made this total 150. Houston Baptist, I'm going to call it like it is. They're a bottom 10 team in all of college basketball. They wound up losing in their game yesterday by a count of 90-81 against Southeast Louisiana, and they were lucky to be able to hold in that game. They wound up being able to shoot a little bit over 50% from the floor. This is a team that they are relatively sloppy with the ball. You take a look at the Houston Baptist team, despite the fact that like half of their opponents have been non-D1 teams. They're averaging right around 16.5 turnovers a game. They do shoot 33% from 3-point range. Darius Lee has been very intriguing for this team, and he wound up missing the game yesterday. You got to figure that he's going to be out once again. Team solid player, 13 points, 9 rebounds per game. Meanwhile, you take a look at the flip side for New Orleans. They legitimately should have won the game against McNeese State, but there was a foul called 80 feet away from the basket with about 15 seconds left. So that's a big giant calamity. Derek St. Hilaire has been able to give the team 18 points per game. He wound up having really an off day when it came to McNeese State and that double overtime game. He wound up being able to give the team 17 points, but he did so on like 20 shots. You've got Troy Green Jr. that does a good job with this offense. 3.5 assists to 1.9 turnovers per game. Now New Orleans, they commit right around 15 turnovers per game themselves, but they face off against the Houston Baptist team that doesn't necessarily do a great job of forcing turnovers against D1 competition. And you did see some good moments out of Deshaun Allen Eikens. He had 9 points, 6 rebounds in the game yesterday. He was a All Summit League rookie performer with 13.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game 2 seasons ago. So I do think that he's going to be able to do some good things. You are probably going to be without one of your main rebounder starters in Robbie Robinson as well, but Simeon Kirkland at 12 points, 12 rebounds in the game yesterday. Overall, he's averaging right around 5 rebounds per game for this team. So I do think that New Orleans is going to be able to have the upper end. I think that they're going to be able to dominate down low. Keep in mind, this is going to be a 9 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Central time first tip. So set this total at 150 with Houston Baptist playing no defense and set New Orleans as a 12-point favorite. 306-193, 306-194. Incarnate Word is going to be playing against Northwestern State. Once again, no numbers up on this game, but I did wind up sending Incarnate Word as a 2-point favorite. I anticipate Incarnate Word being a little bit of an underdog, so I'll probably be taking a look at a money line in this spot. But when it comes to Incarnate Word, I think that we've got to be gauging this team a little bit differently because now they do have Josh Morgan back in the fold. I'm doing this as we don't know his exact stat line from what he wound up doing against Nichols yesterday, but I mean, by and large, he has been a guy that has been able to do some good things for the team. 13 points per game, 43% three-point shooter. RJ Glasper, the transfer from Oral Roberts, has been able to give the team 14 points per game, shooting 34.5% for three. And Incarnate Word, they do shoot 74.5% the free throw line, 36% for three. The 15 turnovers per game, that has certainly been unsightly for this team. They are going up against a Northwestern State team that they force a couple of steals, but Northwestern State, they're looking to do a little bit more down low. When it comes to Northwestern State, this is a team that they commit right around 15 turnovers per game. They get right around 7 steals per game. Now, the big thing for this team is that you've got Carvel Tisat, who is back in the fold for the team. He's been able to give the team right around 10.5 points per game, 10-plus points in now each of the team's last four contests, shooting around 32% from three-point range. Kendall Coleman down low, 15 points, 8 boards per game going into yesterday, so these guys have been able to do a relatively solid job. But when it comes to Northwestern State, just a team that gets very sloppy, a team that they really don't play a lot of defense. You saw Texas A&M Corpus Christi just absolutely carved them up yesterday with Northwestern State giving 16 turnovers. So I do think that this is a game in which it's going to be slowed down a little bit. At Incarnate Word, they'd like to slow down the tempo of Northwestern State, a little bit more of a gunnet style team. So I do wind up sending this total at 144, but I do think that the shooting of Incarnate Word going to be able to win out. I wind up sending Incarnate Word as a 2-point favorite as a result. 306-195, 306-186. McNeese State is going to be playing against Southeast Louisiana. I wind up sending Southeast Louisiana as a 7-point favorite total on this game. I wound up setting is 151 because once again, we don't have set matchups when it comes to this one. But when it comes to Southeast Louisiana, I do like what I'm seeing out of this team. You've got Gus Okafor, who has been able to do a good job of being able to combine with Keon Clergeau going into yesterday. These two guys were combining for about 34.5 points per game. Okafor wound up going out for a nice 25-point performance yesterday. He's shooting from three-point range right in the neighborhood of about 38%. He has been able to get the team 12-plus points in each of the team's last four games. A guy that's able to haul in there 5.5 rebounds per game. Clergeau has been able to do a nice job doling out 3.5 assists per game. Overall, Southeast Louisiana turns the ball over 14 times per game, but they also do force their opponents into right around 8.5 steals per game when it comes to Southeast Louisiana. I don't think that they're going to go 16 of 25 from three-point range like they wound up doing yesterday, but with McNeese State, the free throw shooting has to be a big, giant concern for this team because you take a look at what they did yesterday. They wound up going at the free throw line 24 of 46, and it's not like that was an outlier. Going into that game, McNeese State was shooting 58.5% at the free throw line, so that lowered their free throw shooting percentage to like 58. Now, Brendan Medley-Bacon is someone that's able to dominate down low, a guy that's able to give you 10 points, 6 rebounds per game, right around a block and a half per contest, so he's able to do a relatively solid job there. You do wind up bringing in Miles Lewis from VMI, a guy that had 6'5", last year shot 43% from 3. This year, he's shooting like 14% from 3, but did have 19 points, 12 rebounds in that victory against New Orleans. And then Colin Warren, I think, is a little bit of a interesting mixer and shaker. Guy that's able to give you right around 9 points per game, shooting in the mid-30s from 3-point range. But McNeese State, the 17-plus turnovers per game, I think, are going to prove to be very costly in this game. It is a spot that, as a result, I did wind up setting Southeast Louisiana as more around a 7-point favorite. With this total, I probably would be willing to nudge it up a little bit more, but I do think that McNeese State going to be a tad bit tired, and they just don't hit their free throws. So set this total at 151, made Southeast Louisiana a 7-point favorite, and we wrap things up with 306-197, 306-198. Nichols is going to be playing host to Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Once again, no numbers up on this game as we are still out there in Katy, Texas. But for Nichols, wound up setting them as a 7.5-point favorite. Got off to an early good start against Incarnate Word. And this is a team that in the last 4 years, they've been in the top 15 with regards to steals per game in three of them. You wound up seeing them go on the road very nearly knock off Wisconsin. They had a spirited effort against Purdue as well. And going into yesterday, Devontae Carter winds up coming in from that Norfolk State team that wound up making the NCAA tournament last year. 11 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals per game, so he's been able to do a good job for Nichols. This is a team that they really do struggle at the free throw line. They only shoot right around 59% while they're there, so that is certainly a concern. Now, when it comes to Texas A&M Corpus Christi, they are pumping up the tempo. Defense has not necessarily been there. They looked solid yesterday against Northwestern State, but the Demons are not a good offense, to say the least. Now, the guy that I really like for this Corpus Christi team, Isaac Mushila, 14 points, 8.5 rebounds per game going into yesterday, where he had 27-13. So he was really able to put on a nice show for the people. You've got a Texas A&M Corpus Christi team that they don't necessarily go bombs away from three-point range, but right around 34-35% from three-point range. That is certainly going to fly. Miles Smith has honestly been a big-time contributor for this team. He wound up missing yesterday. That really doesn't affect my handicap at all, because he's been really seeing a little bit of fall since he wound up having 13 points per game two seasons ago. San Antonio Brinson hasn't necessarily been a fit either, so you're going to need Travion Tennyson to be able to continue to average right around 11 points per game. He averaged that going into the game yesterday. He wound up having that yesterday, so very much online with that regard. But you've got a Corpus Christi team that they can get a little bit bludgeoned on the glass. Other than Muchiva, you really don't have anyone other than Delarius Keys, who's been able to give the team more than 5 rebounds per game. He's been able to give the team right around 7 points to go along with 5.3 rebounds per game. But I take a look at the spot, I do think that Nichols is going to be able to turn over a Corpus Christi team that has been committing right around 13.5 of them per contest. So this is a spot in which I did wind up setting a relatively high total as well. 154.5, you got a Corpus Christi team that is one of the top teams with regards to possessions per game in all of college basketball. And Nichols team really looking to gun it themselves. So set the total at 154.5, made Nichols a 7.5 point favorite. And that will wrap things up for the Friday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. Always a pleasure to have on our good friend Sean Paul of Making the Madness. He joined me in the second segment. If you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at JarenSquirty1. Keep in mind, letter CM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast by the 5-star review. Going to be coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, which means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.